Ethan got this new toy. So we have two types of toys for the baby toys, right? We have the stuff you buy at Toys R Us,
Junk, we call that junk.
it's name brand,
Sure.
whatever your opinion of it is, but stuff that you would recognize. And then there's the stuff that I don't know where it comes from, but it's being brought into the house by friends of friends and friends of family and people who just need to bring a gift, right? And they drive by a gas station or something. So,
Junkier.
junkie or yeah. So, and he takes to some stuff and he doesn't take to other stuff. And there's no predicting what he likes and what he doesn't like. But he likes this new toy, and so all of it is made in China, right? But some of it is designed in California by Apple, made in China, and some of it is flat out made in China. And so this toy, it's like every other toddler toy. You press buttons and it plays sounds and it talks to him, whatever. And but this toy is like so clearly made in China. First of all, it plays. It doesn't know what it's about. It plays music for like a baby, and it has identified shapes and colors for like a baby, but the content is math tests and like eighth grade math. And that's not all. When you start playing with it, and American toys, or at least toys designed in America, modern toys designed in America, if you do something like a math test or a spelling bee toy or something like that, right, and the toddler gets it wrong, the feedback is that's not quite right, or try again, right? This toy is like, first of all, it's recorded clearly by a Chinese lady with a heavy Chinese accent trying to speak English. But this toy, when it asks you what's like 16 divided by 3 or something, and he presses some buttons because he just knows like 12 words, he presses some buttons, it flat out says, "You're wrong." I'm like, "Holy shit, lady, calm down. It's only a toy."
That in the Batman voice, it does
That
that? You're wrong.
would never happen in like an American design toy. The parents would just like boycott the company. Like, don't yell at my kid. Don't tell him he's wrong. Tell him try again. So, this toy is hilarious, but he loves it. It's so weird. Just yells at him all day.
Well, you know what? That's the thing with these toys. It's like all these kids' toys, the design, I always find designing them fascinating since I consider myself a somewhat expert in this field now with three kids. And it's like they're all designed to appeal to the parents and or the kids, like in their moment of weakness, like walking through the aisle, at Toys R Us or whatever. But none of them are actually fun to play with. Like almost every just plastic, junky, generic toy we have, it gets played with when it first comes home. And it never, ever, ever gets played with ever again. Like, especially as they get older, it's even more true. Like, as a baby, sometimes, yeah, those things with like buttons and stuff, like the baby will play with it, when it happens across it or whatever. But like, we just have buckets and buckets of crap that nobody ever plays with. People only play with Legos, cardboard boxes, old, like, a big, heavy, like a cardboard tube, like that you might have.
Posters or something.
Like something like that. Like was like a poster was delivered in it. So it's like a big, heavy cardboard tube. Those things are great. Old construction materials, like we have some wood boards and things. They played those. Then that's like it. And all the other plastic stuff, it never gets played with ever.
You have too much choice in America. When I was growing up in Russia, we had like three toys.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But a lot of the stuff in Russia was like, sort of like what Legos are here, but they weren't made of Legos. They were made of metal.
Well, that's for it lasts forever.
But they were fun. I mean, you used to play, used to build stuff with that stuff, and cheap to make because you're not actually designing a toy. You're just putting a whole bunch of metal parts to fit together into a box. And but it builds an imagination, I guess. But I mean, yeah, not, I don't like any of these toys. All the toys that Ethan has is basically press a button and it plays some sound or music or something. That's it.
Yeah.
Except for
And the
Legos.
And people always bring you this crap. Like, we have three kids. We don't need any more toys. Like, we're good on toys.
I brought you a
Because it's
toy
like,
last time I showed up.
I know.
Yeah,
But I think, wasn't it Legos? I think it was
it was
Legos, right?
Legos.
Yeah. See,
Yeah,
Legos, I don't mind. Like, you can never have too many Legos because Legos are A, high quality. They're not just like you use it once and it breaks and then it's complete just crap after that. So I like them because they're high quality. I like them because they're infinitely you know, reusable. You could just make different stuff out of them, and that's all the fun of them is making new things or whatever. So Legos are high on my list of solid presents, but you know, Legos are super expensive. So it's like, you know, you don't want to like tell everybody only bring us Legos or something, because you know, it's like Legos are like $70, you know, essentially. And I mean, there's a few, the tiniest set is still like $15 or $20.
What we wind up doing is I guess it's a trick, everybody knows this, but whatever, we just hide like 90% of the toys and let him discover it like 8 months later, and he's like, oh my god, a new toy I found under the couch.
Yeah, that does work good. If you rotate them through, that does kind of help. They'll get like one day out of it. 6 months from now, they'll have fun for a day. And then they'll be bored of it.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Good. It was good, except that then the next day Jamie got sick, so that was rough. But not because of Thanksgiving, just because it was all – our oldest son had been throwing up sick like the week before that, so – that's the other thing with kids is like it's this inevitability that you will become sick, because you see they always get sick first, and then you know you will be sick in the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to escape it. It can't be done. You will get sick. And so we knew at least some of us were going to be throwing up after he threw up. And so Jamie got the throwing up and I got the flu. So
everything is good now.
Yeah, everybody's pretty much healthy. I think the baby's got a little bit of an ear infection, but that's getting treated. And then everybody should be 90%, which is as best as it's going to be when you have a little baby.
Dinner conversation at my house, Thanksgiving dinner conversation at my house, included an objective comparison of the different types of herring. I lead an exciting life.
That is exciting. Did you guys host Thanksgiving?
No, just in-laws and such.
Typical. But you went
house? We went there. My family.
Went there.
Yeah, and nice. My wife's family. So what else is going on? UberDeck is not getting any traction, man.
UberDeck guy, we're gonna spend some time on the UberDeck here. So, all right. Well, first of all, this was intrigued me because you did a holiday sale.
I did a holiday sale.
You know, Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, whatever, all that stuff. And it was quite a sale. It was like 6 months free or something like that, right?
Yeah, but I mean, everybody's doing these crazy things for Cyber Monday and Black Friday or whatever. So it was just 3 days. It was 3 days, and it was announced like on a Saturday. So it was like basically like two days or 1.5 days of people paying attention.
And so did that work? Did it get any mentions anywhere?
I got a couple of signups, but you know, sale and promotional signups are not traction signups. So you can't
You've switched to taking the credit card up front, right? So these are people interested enough to actually put their credit card in.
Yeah. Higher indicators than, you know, just free accounts, but still nothing much. And a couple of weird ones where they sign up and then they cancel the account right away.
Right.
Sort of like the lock-in, the six-month thing, but not have to pay anything until they really start using it, which I don't think that's going to work out.
Right. It might not actually work that way, right? Yeah.
But I guess it's
well, they might just go and check it out.
No, I mean, if they start using it in like 2 months, they still get the 4 months of free use out of that.
Oh, okay. So.
But they only have to pay for. But wait, they still don't have to pay anything. So I don't understand this whole tactic of signing up to take advantage of a 6 month promotion and then canceling it a minute later. Whatever. I have to start talking to customers. Rob Walling and Mike Tabor, they have the Startups for the Rest of Us podcast.
Yep.
Shout out to them. They don't need a shout out. They're like a million times bigger than us.
They're on episode like 180 or something like that.
160.
Is it 160?
So yeah, the only reason I know that is because in the latest episode, they came back to us where a couple of episodes ago, I said that you can't play any of these A/B testing and other marketing games unless you get some kind of traction with your app. So in the beginning, when you have like 3 signups a month and like 5 visits a day, right, you can't play any of this marketing stuff. And I did sort of a call out to anybody who thinks about this stuff on a daily basis to put up some more content or to address the issue of what type of marketing you could do for an app that's in these stupid early stages. Right. And they actually went out and And, you know, they played back our conversation from that episode. And they answered the question. Well, they sort of addressed the question. So thanks, guys, for that. Basically, you could go – the listeners can go and listen to the show. We'll link to it from the show notes. But basically, the focus was that you can't do things that scale in the beginning. So all of these automated testing and conversion things are out, and you basically have to go and talk to the customer and handhold them and onboard them for like months, I guess, until they get settled in, until the app starts bringing in sort of like automated flow of traffic. You can't do automated marketing with it. So that's what I'm going to go out. I'm going to contact a bunch of people who signed up and haven't done anything with UberDeck yet. And I'm going to contact a bunch of people who have done stuff with UberDeck and see if I could do something for them. So that's on that front. So thanks to those guys. And also thanks to Andy Bryce. We had him on from SuccessfulSoftware.net. We had him on the show as a guest a while back. And Andy Bryce does consulting, right, for AdWords and right. Startup. By the way, that thing he did with the course he was teaching for the couple of days exclusive high focus course on how to bring up a software company from the ground up.
Right, like the physical on premise training
in England. Yeah, that worked out well. So he's going to wind up doing a bunch more, I think.
Oh wow!
So it was really successful. That'd be awesome
if he brings it to the US.
I'd go.
Yeah.
So he does consulting on the side, and he took pity on me. he took pity.
On You've known him a long time.
Yeah, it's sort of the benefit of going to startup kindergarten together back in the day. He took pity on me with UberDeck because I'm really feeling like a child after like years. I'm dropping all the new product. I'm dropping making new products for mobile. I'm essentially switching over to web and other stuff that actually needs marketing, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So I'm essentially, you know, starting out fresh. Right. And so he took pity on me, and he said, well, let me take a look at your AdWords campaign. AdWords has this thing where you could invite people in to manage your campaign for you. Right. But I've been doing like content stuff and some, you know, like the holiday special promotional stuff and a whole bunch of other marketing stuff. And AdWords is the only sort of paid thing that I did. Right. And I've been running it for a couple of weeks, and it doesn't even have any hits, right? Because the way UberDeck is positioned, push itself is sort of a commodity now, where all of these big VC-backed players are able to offer essentially all push for free. And so if you just want push, you could pretty much sign up with anybody. It's like buying beer at a grocery store. Right. Everybody's beer is the same. But for rich push, we do a better job of anybody I know, because we were able to actually focus on upselling your new apps to your existing customers. So mm-hmm. other people do weird stuff with rich push, but I think what I do with rich push is the sort of stuff that I actually wind up using in our own app. So I find it useful. So push is sort of like the thing you got to have to be able to even compete. But rich push is the stuff that UberDeck wants to stand out on, right? That's the stuff that I want people to use. Unfortunately, rich push is like nobody searches for rich push. It's just not a concept.
Right. Yeah.
Rich push is the sort of thing that those VC-backed big players, they bring in their customers on push searches, and then they upsell them stuff like rich push. But we can't compete on those push searches because they're bidding like $5 a word or whatever, and they're bringing in all of these people and giving it to them for free. So I'm not competing on push, so I have to compete on search traffic for rich push, but nobody searches for rich push. It's not a concept for searching stuff. So I was able to put together maybe like 5 or 6 or 7 keywords or key phrases. And so I set up an AdWords campaign, and I got like one impression. Forget clicks. One impression over like two weeks or something. And so Andy took a pity on me, and he does this for consulting, so he's like professional at this stuff. And he's like, let me log into your AdWords account. And this guy like, he breached and cleared the room with a shotgun. This is like a master at work. He went in there, and I got back an email, and there's like bullet points of shit I did wrong. And then the final line is what makes a professional stand out. He's like, leave it with me. Right. And for like 3 days, he's been managing this account. And there's like 4,000 keywords in there now. Right. And it's like optimized where it's like bidding less on a weekend because nobody cares about weekends, and bidding more on other things. It's like this thing is like completely optimized, like professional. It's like it gleams. It's beautiful.
Don't want to touch it now.
So now everything I do will screw it up. He should completely optimize this campaign. So, yeah, whatever he charges for a regular session for consulting fee, it's totally worth it because that guy knows what he's doing in those AdWords things. So it's finally getting impressions and it's finally getting some click-throughs, I think. Although I'm afraid to like go in there and check and look around because I'm going to change something and it'll screw everything up. But so we'll see how it goes. And but it still looks like the searches are sort of on a the long tail searches are sort of on a low end of the scale for number of searches.
Right.
But I guess maybe he actually did it in a way that it's optimized for long tail search terms, and I did it in a way that's just half assed.
Right.
So yeah,
it's that stuff. It's all, I mean, I've been reading up on it a bit, and then using a little bit of Andy's secret sauce that I don't know if he has publicly talked about.
He did. He told me. I asked him. He told me he has this keyword. So listen, he has this keyword tool coming out, which is how I guess he got from my stupid little six terms to like 4,000 optimized keywords. So he has this keyword funnel tool he has coming out, and we're gonna link to it. And the show notes for the, it's not out yet. It's in beta, but he put up a page, I think just for this episode or something, because I asked him, do you have anything for us to link to for people who want to like download the beta or something to play with? So I don't think it's available to the public yet, but he did give me a link to, for anybody who wants to go sign up to get this tool to optimize their AdWords stuff. But yeah, I'd much rather just pay whatever he wants and let him manage it. Cause that guy is like a ninja. With the AdWords stuff, it would take me years. I mean, the thing I took away from this is I was really down, and like a couple of days ago or yesterday, or whatever it was, on UberDeck, and I was like even looking around. I was asking for consulting gigs and stuff like that. I was like we're really low on runway here.
Yeah.
Until I have to start going like full time into consulting or finding a job or something. So I was really down on it. And then when Andy stepped in and he looked at the AdWords campaign, and before I even know the results or anything, but I saw the drastic transformation and like what he's able to do with marketing and AdWords and what I was able to do with like, I'm not a stupid person, but like as a naive person approaching AdWords marketing, what I was able to do and what he was able to do over, you know, 8 years of figuring this stuff out. And the one thing that went into my mind is it would be a shame if the difference between the company failing and the company not failing is figuring out how to do something like AdWords, you know?
Yeah.
It would just be like a fundamental shame of like a person's life changes, having to go back to work or not seeing his kid, you know, the whole day or something like that. Like a fundamental life change would have occurred. And the only difference between those lifestyles is whether you know how to use a silly tool like AdWords or whether you spend time on marketing rather than code. It's just such a what seems to be like a trivial decision that you make some years ago as to what to focus on in your business has like these repercussions later on in how you're positioned to deal with changes in it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's one of those things that I feel like in the bootstrap world, you know, like AdWords is always frowned upon because it costs money and always the focus is on don't spend any money and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's a reason why it's so massive and Google makes so much money because, you know, it's just hard to reach people at the very moment they want to purchase something. So, you know, all these other strategies, you know, take so long to come to fruition. Where AdWords, you get to step in right at the moment somebody's looking for your solution. So that's definitely got me, you know, thinking about it a little bit more and, you know, myself. And it's like, I mean, it's always handy to have access to people who know what they're doing in this space, which makes you feel a little bit more comfortable about it too, and be able to get some assistance and know what, you know, tools to buy and even just things like that. Things that can help you and having kind of access to that info. So I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see how you make out with it, because, I mean, I think your space is probably a little less – I don't know how many – I mean, there's definitely some big competitors, but I don't know if it's as crowded as Help Desk. I mean, it seems less crowded overall, although maybe more dominated by a few, like, really big guys. But in Help Desk, you know, the keywords are all super expensive, at least based on the Google keyword suggest tool, which – people say it isn't that accurate, so who knows. But you know, they're all $20-$30, things like that. So definitely kind of take advantage of some of the long tail stuff and some of the more specific keywords that are more unique to what we do versus the kind of generic help desk software and those very common ones. So I mean, I'm sure in your space you're gonna find those kind of offshoot ones as well a bit. But and I'm kind of getting really interested in it. I'm pretty excited to really delve into it in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to really dig into it and hit Andy up and get my – I mean, I have an AdWords account forever that pretty much right now just runs when people search for HelpSpot, then it picks it up, but mm-hmm. it doesn't do anything else right now. So – and then even that costs like a couple hundred bucks a month, but I don't know. And that – who knows if that's even worth it, because we're just first and anyway, but – that seems like, why not make sure we control that one? But yeah, so we'll be, you know, kind of digging into this has been on my brain and pretty exciting. So so you don't know how it's been though in this initial couple days here. Like, I mean, I guess it's only been a couple days, so it's hard to really tell.
Well, he only set it up yesterday morning.
Okay.
So Google has that 24-hour turnaround thing. So it looks like, from what I understand, I mean, it's sort of like looking at a professional work and then coming into it with a naive perspective and trying to figure out why he did what he did. But looking at it, it looked like Google – first of all, it looks like Google is playing games, because we're trying to keep the bids down to where it's not $5 for a keyword. And it looks like some of the Google – testing stuff is indicating that we should be hitting on certain phrases on the front page, but when you actually do a search, we're not hitting the front page. And Andy's kind of getting pissed off at Google. He says they're just playing with you because you're not bidding enough or something. But who knows what Google is trying to do? It's kind of like a black art figuring all that stuff out. But so it's getting more impressions than with my stuff, but you know, it remains to be seen. I have no idea whether – I asked Andy this when we first started talking, and he said, well, there's no way to know. And what I asked was, well, how do you know the difference between whether stuff is just not working yet or whether it's just not going to work? And it's kind of impossible to prove a negative here. And, you know, right now it's not getting enough traction. Well, how long would I have to put into it to see? And I'm not even talking about just AdWords, just content stuff, cross-promotional stuff, all this stuff. How do I know when it's not going to get enough traction because it's early, or it's not going to get enough traction because it's just not going to get enough traction? So it has all the features that it needs, and I'm not going to put in more time into it until it shows that it could put it, you know, pull its own weight a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, I mean, you want to be careful not to overspend on it and all, but I mean, I think it's more just a waiting game. I mean, you just got to keep working on it marketing-wise, but I mean, there's a total need for it. Mobile is growing hugely. So, you know, I think part of it is just like that, you know, you can jumpstart it a little bit with AdWords if you can get that really optimized so that it doesn't like break the bank, you know, at least maybe get it paying for itself, if nothing else, you know. And then, you know, and then the rest of it is just like being out in the community long enough so that people eventually are, you know, talking about you on their podcast or tweeting about it, or, you know, you get enough customers that talk about it a little bit and things like that. I mean, look at Snappy. I mean, it's been, you know, 6 months or whatever since we started selling it. Not quite 6 months, but 5 months. And I mean, it's really just starting to tick up. You know, we had the initial like beta group that we sold into, so that was good. And we've lost very few customers, which is great. So people like it and are using it. But, you know, now after that initial big hop, you know, there's not been that much, and it's just starting to tick up a little bit now. So, you know, it takes time to build that all out. But, you know, I've had some good success. I tried stealing a page out of some of these growth hackers books. One company asked us, and I asked another company if we could do guest blog posts, mm-hmm. and both of those turned out good. So one is on this system called Pusher that we use extensively in Snappy, which kind of handles browser to browser real time communication, mm-hmm. and pretty much everything in Snappy is based off it, so everything's real time without refreshing or anything like that. And this other company called Found.no, which we use for hosting our Elasticsearch servers so that we don't have to run our own Elasticsearch, because Elasticsearch is kind of a bear. And if it gets, if we have a big enough installation eventually, it would make sense to bring it in-house. But for now, you know, we just pay them a little bit of money and they host the Elasticsearch. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, who knows if that's going to generate anything. But, you know, in terms of search engine optimization and all these people, well, and about Found, they're pretty new too. But Pusher definitely has a much larger audience than we have. So, you know, I mean, some of these kind of ways you can cross-promote, you know, on top of the services you're using extensively, doing guest posts or case studies or things like that, trying to get featured a little bit in some places. Those things, I think, make pretty good sense and aren't skeezy like some of these other growth hack things that to me are kind of morally shady. Whereas, you know, just cross-posting on people's blogs and stuff like that, I mean, it's all stuff that's been done forever, essentially, but just kind of packaged up in a new term now. So we've had a little bit of success there in our initial efforts at that, and so I'm going to be doing more of that. Yeah, so, I mean, it's nice too. One of the nice things, I mean, one difference obviously here is, you know, it's great that Taylor and Eric are both wrote those two articles, so I didn't have to actually write those articles, because if I had to write all this stuff on top of everything else going on, obviously it wouldn't get done. So that is a nicety of having some help. But, you know, a lot of people we know in the community, they outsource all that stuff.
The writing?
It seems pretty inexpensive. I don't know. Since we have the people and we built it, I feel like we should just do the writing. But there's definitely people who outsource much or all of it.
I know Chris Hawkins tried to do it, but he wasn't happy with the results.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to find the right person. But if you do, I think that, you know, it's not really that expensive.
For me, the biggest thing would be to pick a topic to write about, not so much the writing itself.
Yeah.
Because you're really doing it as a cross-promotional thing. But at the same time, you don't want to you still want to come up with something useful to write about. Like, I'm always in awe of, like, you know, Rachel and Drew. They right. keep coming up with topics they write about. And they're always, like, interesting things to write about. And, like, that's their entire marketing effort. Right. It's like they write and, you know, the traffic happens to reach their product because people wind up knowing them, and you know, there's a little byline somewhere that says she's running this Perch thing, and then people find Perch, but she's not out to like push Perch, and yet she finds stuff to write about that's really like interesting, like on web development and support and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they you know, too, they had kind of a pretty good following before they even started Perch, and she'd written some books, and he'd has been doing that like 24 ways thing and other things for a while. So they kind of have that, the reverse advantage, which right where they already had a following of, you know, thousands of people. And once you get to that point, then that's great. Cause you can, you know, you already have this group of people to publish into, and those people are talking about what you're doing and all those things. But I know they do they do like podcast advertising, things like that. I mean, that's like what they do. I know when we were speaking with her in person, I don't think it was on the podcast, but they tend to focus, they kind of carved out that niche of like focusing on designers. So, you know, really focusing Perch as a CMS for designers, which I mean, maybe UberDuck needs a little bit of that too. Like just pick, you know, a segment of the market. Like, is it all, you know, focus on game mobile apps or focus on productivity mobile apps, something, and try to just go after that one, you know, segment and focus on those podcasts and those keywords, and, you know, just try to build out a specific niche to start, even though it's a generic tool that, you know, could be used really across any mobile app. But, you know, it might help focus it a little bit as like a starting place since you're only one person. And
yeah, my biggest concern, my biggest concern right now isn't so much the strategy or the tactics of the Uber deck. I mean, I could sit on it forever, except that I can't sit on it forever because it's a more of a personal issue that we are like financially running out of wiggle room here. So I think I have a couple of months before. And then if it, you know, technically, neither Uber deck nor Quinto, even if Quinto is a home run out of the bat as a SaaS thing, is going to bring in what, $500 a month? You know, it's right. I mean, that's a stretch.
Right. That's not enough. You get 100 customers over the next 2 months, and if they're each paying you $15, that's still not that much money a month.
Right.
So, you know, you probably need to augment no matter what. And yeah, you already have one consulting thing you're working on, right?
Right, so, with Carl. So neither Uber deck nor Quinto is technically able to cover us. So me saying we have 2 months of wiggle room, it's not really even that, because I have to start looking for consulting work, like full-time consulting for a while. And it kind of sounded, because I got really burned out on that. Uber deck, you know, it was a long push and it's not getting traction and it's kind of a downer. And all this stuff is now a long push because it's not like mobile apps where you release them and you got like a little bump of sales and the revenue. Right. Another mobile app, a little bit bump of sales revenue. Uber deck took a year and it's like a downer. And now Quinto is like right on the back of Uber deck and now taking a long time to implement. And it's not, even if it's a success, it's not going to bring in revenue to cover. So I was kind of like burned out on the whole startup thing after 8 years already. And like finding like a regular job started to sound like really interesting, even though I hated it and Wall Street is sucky. But it almost sounded like a respite, you know, like getting like a full-time job so I just go and work and not have to worry about any of this stuff for a couple of years.
Right. Just do your time. I mean, you get in a place where, you know, it's only 8 hours or whatever and they're not – killing you with 15-hour days and stuff, then that, I mean, I think we've all, if anybody's been doing this for a while, has had that moment of, oh boy, I would really love to just be working for somebody else right now and have 3 weeks of vacation and set steady paycheck and no, you know, you used to think you had worries when you had a job, and then when you were in your own company, you realized you didn't really have many worries and it was much simpler. So I mean, I could totally relate to that. But I think what you need to do, like, you need to, I think Quinto, you just need to totally forget about that. Like, that needs to just be, because it's really hard to market one product and two products, both of which are brand new, is like impossible. So, especially if you don't have, you know, enough bankroll to just sit on both for a year and a half and ride them out. You know what I mean? Like, so just focus on Uber deck, do some consulting. And, you know, you still have your mobile apps that do a little bit here and there and kind of keep those going and, you know, kind of keep that kind of strategy. I mean, there's so much demand for mobile consultants. It's ridiculous. There's like, I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. There was, there's a factor here where, you know, the part of you that's tired of all this is interested in, you know, just doing some consulting full time and going to a job full time to kind of relax almost. But there's another factor here that after like a decade of not looking for work or not working for somebody else, there's like a feeling of almost embarrassment. It's like almost like you failed at your business type of a thing to have to go back to work. And it's really not. I wasn't handling it well. Like, right. It really hit me harder than I expected it to. Like, I always joked about, oh, it'll be nice and relaxing again to get a paycheck and not have to worry about it. Sure. But it's just, it's, on some level, it's kind of like, dude, you failed. I mean, it took you 8 years to fail, but you failed. That's kind of sucky. I mean, maybe if you do a VC startup, that's part of the game. But those things last 6 months to a year or something, like that, whatever, and maybe a couple of years, and then they go on to another VC-backed startup. But this isn't a VC-backed startup. This is like I've been breathing this shit for 24 hours for the past 8 years. All of a sudden, I have to go back and explain to a person who's interviewing me, which is probably going to be an 18-year-old kid, you know, why I failed at my company. It's kind of like
Well, I mean, I always think that it's going to be – I think it would be fairly easy to get a job that's, you know, pretty reasonable given all the experience and background and everything that it's not like a situation where you've been way out of the game and you don't know the development. And I mean, you know everything and you have tons of experience on every facet. So, I mean, I don't think that getting a job would be difficult, you know, if that's what you end up wanting to do. I mean, the other route is, I mean, I still think you should just ride out with UberDeck, your mobile apps, and pick up a couple of consulting gigs and then see how UberDeck plays out. But, you know, I mean, you could try to go do the VC thing too. Like, oh, well, change the name of this podcast, but hey, you know, if
I don't want to do the VC thing, I'm just saying.
Why not? I mean, I don't think there's any problem with that at all. Especially being in the mobile space. I mean, people are always looking to invest in that stuff. People are giving money to all kinds of crazy stuff on like AngelList and stuff. You see these things; it's crazy.
Did you see this article? I'm going to link to it in the show notes. The founder made $99 from a $82.5 million exit.
No, I didn't see that.
I'm going to send you the link. It's on the nextbigwatt.com from a while back, I think. But basically, they had a startup in the 90s, like five founders, and it was sold in 2011 for $82.5 million. The five founders had to split $36,000. And the one with the least equity out of them got $99.
Wow.
Out of an $89 million exit, crazy.
Yeah, that's sometimes how those things go.
But at the same time, he had a job for whatever 20 years.
Yeah, I'm sure he gets paid. And I mean, who knows? Who knows how much was invested? They sold for $82 million, but you know, maybe they had $200 million invested or something. So.
Another article just came out that I saw today on Hacker News. We'll post it too. Was you know how we like physical products?
We love the physical.
Needwant.com posted a 1 year of running a physical product business. He's a software guy, but he decided to make iPhone cases. So there's an article there. We'll post it in the show notes. But $71,000 in revenue, 4,000 something cases sold in a year. Which is, I made less, I made more running a software company. So,
right.
You know, the one thing that's not covered in the article is like the one thing that's not covered in any of these hardware articles, which is, you know, saying, so I contacted this factory and they agreed to do this for me. It does not belong in a one sentence description. Right. That should be like 3 pages.
Right.
That's the part that like differs from writing software that I'm interested in doing. The part that where you hook up Stripe and start getting Gmail notifications of your sales and going to the post office. I know that stuff. I could figure it out.
Well, there's even the part before that, right? Like the factory is even the step after. I mean, you need to find some engineer. You need CAD drawings of, you know, very specifically the dimensions and the materials and how you actually build the thing you want to build. I mean, if it's something like cases where you're quasi mass producing them or whatever, I mean, you know, you can't just go with your little sketch on a post-it note and have some factory build the thing for you. It's like there's a whole process before that. So I don't know how you go about any of that. Or else you got to do the handcrafted.
Me and like Victoria, when you get a new baby as new parents, there's all of a sudden every week you get all of these ideas because there's huge gaps in the baby market, like right. For babies, for parents, for new parents. Every 3 weeks we used to get an idea for a brilliant new product that just it really I mean, you don't see this in the software world. In the software world, you find an idea for a product in the shower in the morning or something, and you go and you Google it, and there's like 12 pages of competitors. But in the hardware stuff, literally we came up with like an idea like I would buy this right now, and you go and look for it and it does not exist.
Yeah.
And but to make it, it's like, where do you even start? So we were all gung-ho about a couple of things, and we even ordered like some like loose material like styrofoam and stuff just to make models out of and stuff. But then you're a new parent, you have a baby, you haven't slept in 68 hours,
not,
like you have better
not
things
thinking
to do.
Rationally.
And then you forget about the stuff, you know, after a year or something. It's no longer on the forefront of your thoughts. So that's how none of these useful baby things get. But I still bet if I have some time, I will do some of those hardware things. But I'm interested in knowing how to where this stuff is described as to, you know, because there's these factories that like build your shit for you.
Yeah.
But there's like an approach you gotta take to you gotta bring them something. You don't come to the door knocking with an idea and you know on a notepad.
Yeah, I don't know how that all works.
So anyway,
there's got to be stuff out there about it. That's, you gotta have an idea. Now you need a new idea. Now you need $100,000 to go print a bunch of these widgets you want to build. That's even trickier. Trickier than software, not just time.
Yeah. What else is going on?
We hired a new person.
Oh, look, I got to sign up for Uberdeck. What?
Look at that, real time.
you hired a new person. Yeah, that's because I said there's a couple of minutes left in the Uberdeck sale.
Somebody's listening. We should do this live.
So, yeah, so if anybody wants to sign up for Uberdeck, Uberdeck sale is over. But if you're listening to this, I'll grandfather you in. Just send me an email. Yeah. You hired a new person. Stop hiring people.
We're done after this for a while.
I'll go work at Userscape. I'll be the guy who quotes movies in your hip chat room all day.
No, that's me. That's my job.
You got to replace yourself. You got to take yourself out of the equation. I'll be that guy who fills that role.
Well, that is part of the idea. Although, because we're not big enough that, like, I just need to be marketing all the time. Like, and I can't be involved in code anymore. Like, I mean, just a little bit. You know, I don't mind doing some here and there and whatever. And, like, fringe things, like building out the websites, which are just a waste of everybody else's time. So I'll just do them, whatever. But, the new guy who – I can't really say who he is yet, but he's a good guy. And he's going to be kind of taking over all the stuff I still do with HelpSpot. So that'll be mostly and eventually completely off my plate, which will be great. And also things will move, you know, much faster since I'm certainly the bottleneck. So that'll be good. That's kind of what's going on there. But yeah, that's definitely going to be the last hire for a while. We got to start selling some more Snappy first before we can hire any more people. And we're almost getting to the point. There's not many more people I would want to hire. Like, we have customer service. We'll have three developers, which the way these products are built, I mean, I think it's plenty of developers. So, and everybody's, you know, really capable, so they can move between them and things like that, you know, over time. And eventually, like a marketing person maybe would be kind of cool. And it's like pretty much it. Like, I wouldn't really want many more people than that. So we're approaching my maximum number of people I'd want to deal with, I think.
You got to stop when your annual company corporate get-togethers get to a size where, you know, you can manage, and then that's the optimum spot.
Right. We haven't done one of those yet. I want to do one of those, but I don't know. Like, everybody has really young babies and stuff, and it's like dragging everybody somewhere. Plus, we go, you know, there's like Laracon, and there's a couple other things. We like, I go to different conferences and stuff, and I don't know. There hasn't really been a logical time for it, but in the next year or so, I think we'll try to do one.
When's the next Laracon? I've been promised an announcement 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. We're so in a conference, man. It's a real bear. It's a bear.
Who's setting it up for you, Jessica?
Yeah, I mean, Jessica is kind of the point person.
Jessica, get on it.
Me and Taylor are still
get to work.
Heavily involved in it and everything. So, but it's looking like, I mean, it'll definitely be like mid-May. And, yeah, I don't want to say the date on here yet and everything, but it's coming along. I mean, we're making good progress. I mean, the first one we threw, we only started like planning it 3 months before. So this is already still 6 months ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So there's actually plenty of time, but you know, it's going to be bigger, so there's more complexity and everything. But you know, it's going to be all nicer this time. I mean, I think a bigger place, and Focus Lab is doing the Focus Lab, who did all the Snappy, worked with us on Snappy branding and such, mm-hmm. Is a sponsor and is doing, you know, basically all the branding of Laracon. So the website and badges and things like that, which I think, you know, they've already started it, and it looks really, really cool. So I think it's going to look really tight. It's going to be a tight event. But I don't know, like, this is an event thing too. Like, all the stuff that goes on in tech now, it's so, like, I don't know. I feel like everybody throws an event, you know, there's always somebody's upset about something. People are on Twitter complaining. Like, you know, it's like, it's almost getting to the point where it's like, not really worth the hassle and just potential bad publicity over things that are not really entirely under your control. But I don't know. I mean, we're still going to be small enough that I feel like we can control it, and we know a lot of the people there, so it's not quite all the way to a bunch of random people. Like a lot of other bigger conferences are just random people. You don't know who they are. So we're still going to have a pretty good core of people who we know really well, but I don't know. It's definitely, even just between the 2 years, is like a different tone now that makes it even more nerve-wracking than it was previously. So
I've heard that a lot lately. I don't remember specifically from whom, but in my head, I remember hearing a lot that putting on these conferences is just not even worth it anymore, like financially.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, financially, it's not. We don't make really any money on it. I like being involved in it, and it's an interesting kind of fun physical world, different thing to do, and it helps Laravel, which helps us indirectly. So all that is good in the parts I like about it, and getting together with people we know from the internet, and so all that I like. But there's just the general complexity of it all, and potential legal issues of it all, and all those kind of things that are a little less appealing. But I'm sure it'll be fine, because obviously you always hear about the ones that there's trouble, and there's thousands of other ones and everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And we've already thrown one that was fine, so I'm not really expecting trouble or anything like that. But it's just when you spend too much time on Twitter, too many of these things come across your plate, and then just makes you think about them more, which is unfortunate.
All right. I don't have anything else.
You
have
what's going on with your mobile apps? So we haven't talked about these in a while. So just like, what's going on with the spam filter, which is still the biggest one, right?
Yeah, but only because it's recurring.
Right. How has that been doing? Like, have you been losing those, or is it just that they're stable?
No, but that's the platform. On the BlackBerry platform that it's running on, it's not even a matter of people not using BlackBerries anymore. Now it's even a matter of the latest model that it's compatible with is not being sold anymore, even by BlackBerry.
Right.
They changed that whole infrastructure of theirs and the operating system. So, I don't think, I haven't checked this, but I don't think it's been getting any like new signups in a long while.
Yeah.
It's all recurring. And the other stuff, the money that's coming in is only coming in because it's sort of driven by cross promotions through UberDeck and stuff. But for example, we have an app, Pregnancy Food Guide, on iOS and a bunch of Android platforms. And we have a note-taking app, and we have a voice recorder app. All that stuff is really sold, selling because UberDeck is cross promoting it between all of those. But none of that stuff is nowhere near the top 1,000.
Yeah.
In a ranking. So I don't know how. We should ask Gavin, because it's Gavin's 5th anniversary in the App Store today.
Yeah.
Gavin, the Retro Dreamer. Gavin and Craig, congratulations. But yeah, we should ask them on how they, what the landscape looks like now in the mobile app market, because I haven't really been competitive there or strategizing in that market for a couple of months now, since I started really focusing on UberDeck and Quinto.
But so it's good you have the recurring of the spam filter. So it doesn't sound like that's gone off the cliff necessarily, but it's just obviously not growing because the platform's kind of dying, and certainly over time it will lose steam.
Over time it just goes down, because recurring really keeps it up. It's like a flotation thing, but it's a flotation thing with a little escaping air.
Right.
So it goes down, but not as slowly as if it was just a sellable product.
Now, have you cross-promoted UberDeck into that? See, I think you should cross-promote UberDeck into those, because obviously not all of them, and obviously not many of them it will be applicable for, but at this point, it seems like it can't hurt to, even if you pick up 10 or 15 customers from that, that's going to be worthwhile.
From what?
From pushing UberDeck out to your existing customer base on these other platforms. I'm sure there's a number of them who are developers or involved in software in some way.
No, that's completely different. Like this is like as B2C as B2C gets.
I thought it was a lot of businesses though who used it.
But like plumbers and like tax guys.
That doesn't sound right.
No, none of these are. I may have like, I have something like 86,000 people on the mailing list for Frontier over the 8 years now. All of them for BlackBerry apps and, and such. And I mean, for a good 60-70% of them, I probably know through various HelpSpot interactions or whatever. I know like what they do because I could look at their signatures and stuff.
Yeah.
I, off the top of my head, I recall maybe four that are in the IT industry, and they're probably just like sysadmin IT.
Four.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not.
It's that's really, a lot of people on that list. I think you're not utilizing that list properly either.
That would be that would be the grossest shotgun blast of a marketing campaign ever. And I think 86,000 people, most of whom are like housewives and teachers and plumbers, and I'm gonna tell them, here, use this tool. Our SDK is awesome. You have no problem integrating
it. You gotta funnel it down a little bit, obviously. But it also, I mean, yeah, I guess you're already cross promoting the other, like the pregnancy food guides and those kind of apps. You're already cross-promoting a bit.
Yeah, but that's focused. I mean, they have a note-taking app that tells them we also have a voice recording app. That's tight.
Right. What about some of those guys? Like maybe like some like the note-taking apps and things. That seems like seasonally it might make sense to do some pushes on those and just do a small update to some marketing.
We do those already. But I mean, mobile app bumps like that, it's a couple of $100 over the course of a couple of days, and that's it. And then it goes back down. All of those things are not interesting to me. Even the UberDeck holiday promo is not interesting to me because all of these promotional things are just statistical outliers. They don't tell you anything about what the business is doing. So I'm not interested in what UberDeck is doing this week. I'll be interested in what UberDeck is doing over December, for example. So,
but we have found, I think like you've seen even with, the spam filter. I mean, with Snappy, we definitely see. I mean, you get these plateaus and then you stay there, like, you know, and you go up. But, you know, obviously, if we had some big downtime issue or something like that, I'm sure we'd lose a chunk. But in general, people really stay pretty well once you get them on board. So, especially something like UberDeck is once you get somebody to commit to integrating it with their app, I would think that's a pretty good place to be.
It's an even stronger indicator for something like Snappy. You don't have a tie-in that's technological like that. People are staying because it's a good product, right? So it's an even stronger indicator that you're doing stuff right.
I suppose.
Because if you're plateauing and then bump and plateauing and bump and plateauing, that's good. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right,
I think it is pretty good. We got it dialed in pretty good now. I'm pretty happy with it, actually. Like, we've figured out the marketing kind of angle on it, I think, and tweak the UI to match that. And so I think it's all coming together. But that's the thing with these things. Like, it's taken a year and a half to build it and then to have people using it and then to figure out its actual specific purpose and then to adjust the marketing so that it actually matches that thing you realize should be its focus. You know, so there's a lot of tweaking that goes, you know, on along the way, where I feel like when, you know, you always read these stupid articles and it's like, oh, this kid thought of this thing and then they built it and then millions of people started using it. But really it's like, no, it's a process that you have to go through. And sure, every once in a while there's Instagram or whatever, but that's not a repeatable thing you could try to do. You just have to stay focused on every day, you know, making the marketing a little better, making the product a little better until you get it all figured out and honed in on exactly what it is and who it competes with and what its real job is, which is, you know, different sometimes than what you start out as.
You're making me sad. It's hard.
It is super hard.
All right, I got to go change the Antera.com from a product page to a consulting page, which is sad in itself. We're going to have the biggest damn portfolio of existing products ever. I've never seen a mobile services company that has as many published apps as we do on our portfolio page that I started putting together yesterday.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's why you're going to have no problem. You're going to be like 6 months from now, you're gonna have like three people working for you.
We're gonna be a consultancy.
Yeah, but then you'll have the best of both. I mean, if you have UberDeck that over 2 years, you know, keeps increasing, you do your mobile. I mean, listen, I know consultants right now who are charging insane, ridiculous, obscene amounts of money to basically put up a WordPress site and put a theme on it, and they're charging really borderline unethical amounts of money for installing WordPress, essentially. And I mean, your stuff, I think that you're probably not going to do those kind of things as much, although I'm sure you could. And your stuff's going to be a little more complicated, but I don't know. I don't think you're going to have a very hard time finding people to use your services and for a very lucrative rate. So
we'll see. I don't know. I haven't done this consulting stuff in a long time, except for Carl.
Yeah, you've had the one kind of ongoing.
Well, Carl was I mean, he approached me directly. It wasn't like I haven't had to hunt for customers in a long time. We'll see. As long as I don't have to start commuting and not seeing Ethan for 10, 12 hours a day, that's the worst. Like, I'll wait until like we have like 13 cents in the bank before I go get a job that'll force me to like leave my family for 12 hours a day. Because that's like the reason why I started the company in 2005, and that's the reason why we're coming up on our 9th year now next month. Wow. And that's the reason that I still run it, and that's like gonna be the thing that I'm gonna try to avoid to the bitter end. Yeah. Having to leave.
I think you'll be able to.
All right.
Then you're not going to know what to do. You're going to have good consulting company. You're going to have UberDeck taken off.
I'll run a consultancy for 20 years. I don't care. as long as I don't have to do a commute every day, I'm a cheap date. That's the only requirement I have. I just don't want to leave my family for that long every day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and with the consulting stuff nowadays, definitely no need to. So, and we know a lot of people in the freelancer space, so I would think you'll be able to pick up some tips and stuff really, really easy and get on the horse. But if nothing else, it's going to be podcast fodder. So content.
Yeah. All right, man. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Thanks for listening, guys. This has been episode, I have no idea. What episode?
27, 28.
Bootstrapped.
Who's going to get there first? 27. Already up to 27.
Yeah. We're up at bootstrapped.fm. Our Twitter handles are on there, and the forums are on there, which are growing fast. I'm going to start charging for the forums.
I know the forums are blown
that'll
up.
That'll resolve my problem. That's like hundreds of people. I'm just gonna resolve my problems instantaneously. $10 a month, and that'll bring me $5,000 a month, and I'll be all set.
You know, there are some people doing some stuff like that with these like more, you know, the one guy does it in freelance stuff where basically like they have a private forum and they charge like $50 a month or something, and they'll do like, they have like a group chat session once a month, and they do, you know, work through some things on this private forum so that they can speak openly. So I actually think there could actually be a kind of interesting market for that in the bootstrap space, but I don't think I want to be the one to run it. But
everybody got to hustle.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, later.
Bye.